Hi there, everybody. This is Armand DeMel with you with The Positive Mind. Yes, if you think it's hard on the chicks, you should see how hard it is on the hens. You know, when they're trying to take care of those little chicks. It's spring out there. With you with The Positive Mind, bringing you very interesting things today. And I want to apologize to any of you for any engineering mishaps which may have occurred over the last 2 hours. They were my fault. But we'll get right past that, and we'll talk about this incredible program we have for you today. This past week, we started off, on Tuesday, we started with talking about loving danger, the love of danger, and what it is about danger that's so important. And we talked about excitability and why excitability is important. But then we talked on Wednesday about fear and how it kind of looks like everybody who is bent out of shape is always afraid. It's fear that runs things. It's fear that makes people angry. It's fear. If you didn't hear either of those two programs, you can get those through our archives, which are available on the website, thepositivemind.com, or on WBAI's website. But little wonder, you know, if you're confused, my friends, because in your run for safety in this world, if fear is one of the dominant forces for all mankind always, because it's laying underneath there, you've got to survive. You got to get through, and there's always a predator who wants to gobble you up. And so right through, you know, being hominid to being now, you've had to watch your butt. Because who knows who's coming after you. And so we build things. We build houses. We build cars. We build separate cages that we live in. We keep people away. We make rules. We develop law. Right? The whole concept of law, the government, rules, is so that people could be safe. The original concept of government was safety. The idea that the population is going to agree on a code so that we could be safe from each other doing criminal things to us. We made you have a penalty if you steal my money, if you take my wife, if you, you know, all these things. Touch my goods. Go after my daughter. All of this, I'm going to have you take my jewels, steal my food. And we have an agreement that if you do that, we're going to have a gang come after you, because we all agree that if one person does it, it makes the rest of us unsafe. So then we have codes of ethics and codes of behavior, right? And people have to behave a certain way. You walk down the street, we demand you wear clothing. Why? Because it's not safe. It's not safe to have some people wear clothing and other people not wear clothing. If the people who don't wear clothing excite the people who do wear clothing, so those who are in control of sexuality like to say, wear clothes. And we make an agreement. Everybody wears clothes unless you're a nudist group. Then you say everybody doesn't wear clothes, and you have that rule instead. And if you see somebody wearing clothing and you're a nudist, they're not safe. Hey, they must be an outsider. Hey, they must be here to take photographs. Hey, they must be here to do bad things to us. So nudists feel unsafe when somebody with clothing come along. So getting this whole idea of getting safe and trying to find a way where you could relax, this whole concept of get a family, sit at home, close your door, turn on your alarm, turn on your TV, take your vitamins, right, so that you're safe, eat carefully, right? Drink a lot of filtered water. It's all about safety, which means it's all about fear. See, this is fear-based thinking that we all go through. Find a mate. 98% of the things copulating in the universe, including, if we include plants, it makes it 99%. They have sex and they leave their partners. Rarely does a partner stick around. Rarely. I mean, nowhere in nature, rarely in nature, very rarely among animals. Plants don't care what happens. I mean, plants use, they pollinate through bees, you know what I mean? They don't know who was the guy who made me pregnant. You know, I'd like to meet my dad. Well, it came in through a bee one day. One bee is talking to another bee on a beach, and one of them is wearing a hat. And the bee says to the other bee, "Why are you wearing a hat?" He said, "Well, I didn't want to be mistaken for a wasp." No, that wasn't how it went. I know it went something like that. I know it's in there. Anyway, this is Armand Demille with you, and I'm having a good time today because it's so gorgeous outside, and I have such good friends around. Today I want to talk about healing power. Yes, you just listened to a program about the healing power of flowers and gongs and sound bells. And you hear healing powers of many different things. What about meditation, biofeedback, neurofeedback, bioenergetics, yoga, Reiki, shamanism, healing with herbs, flowers, water, martial arts, psychotherapy, physiotherapy, aromatherapy, sex therapy, fasting, music, nails, pedicures, acupuncture, massage, all these things that heal you, psychotherapy, family constellations. There are so many things. Colon cleansing. Right? There are so many things. Cleaning up your diet, all of this is fear-based. Doesn't make it wrong, but I want us to understand what we're doing here. What validates and what makes you think that this stuff works? See, and I'm not saying none of it does. Well, here's the basis of all the healing processes that are offered. Everything that is put on the market has two rules. One rule is, I'm going to make you feel better immediately, and I'm going to make you feel better in the long term. In order to sell something, you must make a person feel better immediately, right? Put this under your tongue, and you're going to feel the light come through the room, you know? And you have to give them a long-range benefit. You have to promise a long-range benefit. Usually, the long-range benefit that we offer is the elimination of something that you have to worry about. So it'll say, you know, you will never develop cancer if you smell these flowers. See? It'll keep you close. That's the promise part. But now, in order to get you to buy this, we're going to have you sit still and smell these flowers. Well, take lavender, for example. It's one of my favorite fragrances. Sit me in a room where I whiff lavender for 20 minutes. And I will feel better. I really will. I always feel better when I whiff lavender for 22 minutes. In fact, I always feel better when I whiff a lot of different things. Shalimar, 22 minutes, I will feel better. In fact, I'm willing to bet that you will feel better, unless you have an allergy to smells, as many people I know do, if you whiff anything for 22 minutes. Because 22 minutes of sitting still is healing. Healing meaning you relax. And this is the basis of all the therapies that you'll ever see offered. They tell you lay down for 22 minutes, and you lay down. So remember, we got two parts. We're going to make you immediately feel better, and then we're going to give you a long-range promise. You go to a doctor's office. You wait for the doctor. You're forced to wait for the doctor. You fidget. You read newspapers. You're fidgeting. But believe it or not, you're quieting down. By the time the doctor comes in the room, it's been 22 minutes. Doctors are always 22 minutes late. Right? Didn't you ever notice? Sometimes an hour late. But by then, you've practically fallen asleep. And you've been sitting still for 22 minutes or more. And believe it or not, you feel a little better. Then the doctor promises you that if you take this this medication, you will not regurgitate your food, you will not get rid of your asthma, you will not die of beriberi. Makes you all these promises. So I went through recently something I used to do. I used to do a lot of workshops. Many years ago, I did lots and lots of workshops. I was a keynote speaker at quite a few events, and I picked up the New Life Expo, which I used to be a part of. I picked up their, they're doing something this weekend in New York City. So I picked up the brochure to look at it, and I just said, oh, any of my old friends in there? Well, sure enough, I ran into people that I've known from a way back, and like Don Conroe, who heals with the gong, and we're going to talk about that. And I said, so what do these people offer? What's the long-range offerings? And here are the offerings that we give you, you know. I'm going to read you some of what they offer. Here's one person who offers, she offers that she could see the organs of your human body and discover your defects before they could be detected by medical science with the help of powers which go beyond anything visible. She lays you down on a table, passes her hands over your body, and by the time you get up off that table, you feel better. You feel different. But again, 22 minutes. Acupuncture, 22 minutes. Acupuncture, you lay a person down and you put needles in them and they're afraid to move because the needles are there, you know. And they put on a little quiet music, they make the room a little dark. It's like same with drips, you know, you give people vitamin drips. You tell them sit still for this period of time. So I want to talk about some of the many, many different things that people do in this process. And every time someone comes to me with a new strategy for healing, the thing I hear in it is, and what you do with a person is you keep them quiet for a period of time. We've learned that even talking to someone, that there are certain people who need to increase. They change their hormones just by discussion. You know, usually women will find that conversation for 20 minutes is in itself feels better because of the hormonal changes you go through as you're talking to somebody. So conversation is being still, and that's why women are saying to men all the time, I want you to just talk to me. I want you to sit so we can have a long conversation. Men don't need this as much, but women do. And so they need to replenish their serotonin, and by doing this, they do it by having a conversation for a period of time. So if you sit there and you talk to your honey for 22 minutes, she's going to feel better. In almost everything there is going to be this state where you relax for a period of time. Now, I don't want it to sound too redundant, but, you know, when I go to this, it's important. They discovered a while back that if there was this period of time, and the reason I say 22 minutes is because they've discovered, you know, that there is this thing that takes place when you stop moving for that period of time. How long does it take to do nails, get your nails done? At the most, a half hour. You know how much of that time you're actually having your nails done? 22 minutes. Minimum time, if you could go in and get a 10-minute nail job, I don't think you want it. Foot reflexology, where somebody manipulates your feet, or having getting a pedicure, working on your feet, it's, again, quiet time. Now, I'm going to make a claim that I think this is wrong. I think quiet time is not the healing thing you think it is. I'm saying it just makes you feel better. But I don't think it heals. And I don't think it has long-range effects, especially not the claims that many people have that it makes. Manicure. You know, whoever came up with the word manicure, don't you think by now, since manicures are something that women do, it should be called womanicure, because it's the cure of women. They sit down and they cure their nails, not manicure. Somebody who's out there has got to correct this. Acupuncture, same thing. Acupuncture, press, massage. How about yoga? Of course, yoga has got you quiet. Quiet. Get down there. Get in a position. Hold that position. Hold that position. Reiki. You know, shamans all do this. Every supposed healing shaman will get you and quietly get you to sit still for this period of time. Martial arts gets you to, you know, even though you're doing very active things, it talks about focusing the brain and focusing the brain and trying to get you down there. Well, here's the idea. The idea is that if you can quiet your mind long enough, you're going to not be so frightened. That's all there is to it. If you're scared and you take a deep breath, you won't be so scared. I mean, I know this is simplistic, but really, this is the bottom of our healing arts profession. If you're scared and somebody gets you while you're in a frightened mode and your body's in a frightened mode, which is what I claim most humans do, most humans walk around scared all the time. Even though they don't look like they're scared, they may look like they're happy, but meanwhile they're desperately searching out for the next thing to do. There's a sense of desperation in most people, or they're depressed, which is another form of fear, or they're frightened. Wherever you see it, look all around you. I walked out of my apartment building this morning, and there was a woman selling on the corner, and she was saying, good morning, happy you, and she was giving out newspapers. Scared person. Scared, looked jovial, looked so happy, looked over the top happy, looked manic. I said, scared. I realized that when I took a newspaper from her that she was giving away, I made a contact with her eyes and she quieted for a quick second. And she stopped jumping around. So people are frightened, and almost everybody you know is frightened. And based on your fear, we are gonna sell you things. Okay, let's take a look at a classic now vitamin nutrition WBAI recipe for how to get healthy. Okay, we're gonna get you healthy, and one of the things we're gonna do is we're going to get you to get rid of the things that excite you. No more caffeine. No more sugar. And then we're concerned about the excitatory potential. We know about nicotine, right? We're going to take away nicotine. We're going to take away that. We say to you, no drugs. No drugs. No alcohol. Right? Nothing that's going to work on your chemistry. No meat. Very important, because animals are killers and they live a violent life. And if you eat meat, you're going to become like them. No beef, especially, because, you know, cows, God, what they do to other cows. I don't know. Why is it beef is violent? Oh, because beef have to get killed. You see? And therefore you become a part of the violence. So we're going to clean you out. And then what we're going to do is we're going to put you in a machine and we're going to clean your colon. Right? So now we're going to control what you put in your body. We're going to have no stimulants. We're going to tell you to drink pure water and lots of it. And then we're going to get you to find quiet time. So you find quiet time and we flush your body out of everything and we give you nothing to put in it and we put in good, healthy, quieting herbs and herbal tea and stuff like that. And you learn to be quiet. Well, quiet's good. Why is quiet good? Because quiet is not fear. You lose your fear during that period of time, my friends, and it's important. It's what we want to do. We want to cut down on fear-based behaviors. Is this curative? I don't know if it's curative, but I do know it stops you from doing stupid things, like falling in love out of desperation, like doing things that are desperate, like gambling, like taking risks that really are not risks that are worthwhile. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. We'll be taking your calls a little later. If you just were to look, as I do, at all the different things being offered out there, I want you to look for that one ingredient of getting quiet. Here's what they believed. A friend of mine, Marge King, in California, back in the 70s, she did the most interesting thing. She had a little galvanic skin response machine, a GSR it was called. You put two fingers on this little piece of wood, had a battery inside of it, and if you meditated or if you could drop your waves, your brain waves, down from where they were, your excitatory level, to a lower level. If you got calm, the sound of the machine would lower. It would go from to She gave these to 5- and 6-year-old kids in school. She taught first grade. I think that's first grade, isn't it? And she taught first grade, and she brought them all to the kids in school, and she brought him. This is Marge King. She was a very interesting lady. Is still around there, way in her 90s. And Marge King said to the kids, I want you to compete with this. The one who gets the deepest sound for the longest period of time will get a reward. And she gave them rewards, which were, believe it or not, stars, gold stars. That was a total reward. Well, kids, they love competition, so they jumped at it. And everybody was trying to get the tone to go down. Then they were learning to moderate the tone, have it go lower, get higher, just through their mind. These kids learned to quiet their mind. They learned to drop to a certain level of brainwave just because they thought they were competing. And as a result of it, they all advanced very rapidly in their classes. These kids became the ones who progressed faster. Like you think about ADD and children, which we're going to do a lot of presentations on in the future, and you think, what would happen? Is ADD a child afraid? You know, I think that's what it stands for. It's a scared kid. If you look at a child with ADD, they look afraid. They look scared. They're frantic. Attention deficit disorder. How could you pay attention to anything when you're that scared? All you're doing is looking at the moment, not the future, not the past. You're in the moment. ADD. ADHD. Defiant personality disorder means don't put me in a box, because I'm so scared that if you put me in a box, I think I'm going to die. So I'm going to be defiant. I'm going to stop everything you try to do that puts me in some kind of a box. Fear. So do we want, is fear, you know, which was very necessary for us to get to the point that we've gotten to in life, for us to have survived as a species, we used fear as our backdrop. And with this fear, we were able to build houses and get jobs and have families now. You get a family, right? You find one mate, you have children, you all hang out together in the same cave. You protect yourselves. You visit your family, the rest of your family. You all have a collective. You have a clan. Now the clan is safer because you have a clan, you have a neighborhood, and you have neighborhood watch, and you make sure that, you know, your neighborhood is safe. It's all about safe, safe, safe. Get safe. How much of your life is spent being safe? So I say one of two things. You're either frightened or depressed, which to me is a form of fear, or you're somebody who is always over the top of it all, you know, and I call that hyper-frightened, and that's a person who is manic. They're happy beyond control. They're always moving, and they're moving so fast they can't stand still. And what happens when you get somebody who moves all the time and can't complete tasks and has troubles with authorities? What do you have when you have this? You have somebody who's frightened. So one of the ways of treating them is to get them to calm down, get them to face that fear, so that they can find out nothing's really going to happen to them. But instead, what we do is we sell you different things. We can sell you water therapy, hydrotherapy, whirlpool therapy, or jacuzzi therapy. We can tell you swim 20 laps a day. Dancing. Dancing is, well, how does dancing work to get you quiet? Well, you exhaust yourself, but once you get into the rhythm of music, because music is another thing that will carry you away from your fear. It puts you into a collective connection with the universe. It really does. And when you feel that connection, the fear kind of goes away for a moment. All the other things that we do is an attempt to put away the fear and put it out of our minds for a little bit to get away from it. What kind of fears do we have? Do we have fear of death, fear of illness, fear of being alone, fear of being out of control, you know. So going through the catalog for the New Life Expo, we have, I'm looking in front of me, here we have How to Defend Yourself from Psychic Vampires. That's a workshop. A guy named James Caper does it. He says you got to protect yourself from psychic vampires. What do you think? Is that a fear-based workshop? How about this? Stop cravings, mood swings, headaches, low sex drive, and memory loss with this four-step process that increases your energy. See? Loss is in it. Loss of sex drive, loss of everything. Is on the same page. Program designed to help you find the love of your life and the life that you love and leave your torment forever. Right? More safety. We could have hatha postures for yoga teachers and advanced students that help you drop out of the crazy world. We could have you knowing your own future. Another workshop. Here's another workshop called The Underlying Cause of All Disease. Take advantage of this rare opportunity to personally meet this public speaker and author, the guru to physical, emotional, and spiritual healing, who will give you actual tools and techniques to transform your life to avoid cancer, heart disease, diabetes, and arthritis. How's that? I mean, who wouldn't go to that? How about the gateway to healing? We're using 38 flower remedies, right? I mean, I know some of the flower remedy people. They're awful good people. You know, all of these things is awful good. I'm not debunking it and just saying it's not what it seems. It's not what it seems because the main thing it does for you is it aids you in getting quiet and leaving, for a little bit, leaving the fear that most people live with. If you understood the fear of your mate, you know, think about your boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, wife. Ask yourself, what are they afraid of? Are they afraid you're going to leave them? Are they afraid you're going to betray them? Are they afraid that in some way you're going to hurt them? Work with that fear. Deal with that. Is there something you do that keeps that fear going? Is your sense of independence such that you want people to be frightened so that they can't be secure? Well, that's your fear. See, your fear is wanting people to be frightened and unsure of you. Hey, there's more and more and more. And I would strongly suggest you get this catalog because it is so you could heal with Ayurveda medicine. You could do, just so many. There's so many. We're going to talk about these landscapes of the souls. There's gonging and there's eat raw, which is very important. Then we have intravenous ozone therapy, which has the biggest ad in the entire magazine, and therefore it must be better than all the other ones. And then you have the integrity of love, and you have psychic empowerment, chakra meditations, light therapy, fingernail and tongue analysis, and you think I'm making this up, don't you? I mean, I'm literally reading it out of a magazine. We have love signs, soulmates, tools to enhance your intuitive awareness, amazing, chakra workouts with essential oils, and so on. I'm going to take a short break. When we come back from our break, which I will do, T-Dub, I will do the whole thing. Oh, I've got something special for you. Oh, do I have something special for you. So our assumption is that what we're looking for is quiet. When you're quiet, how does your heart beat? What do you imagine a quiet heartbeat sounds like? You think it goes, thump, 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 right? The human heartbeat. Well, how many of you have had babies? If you listen to a baby in utero, with a stethoscope, you could hear your baby's heartbeat, can't you? Now, not a stethoscope. They have ultrasound, right? You could hear the baby's heartbeat. Now, what's important about that? By the way, it is 1:30 here at WBAI 99.5 FM in New York. A baby's heartbeat is anything but quiet. But if you listen to it, something could happen to you. If you listen to it, and I'm not going to play it for 22 minutes, but I found something I had for you a long time ago. This is a recording by a man I knew named Mickey Hart, who collected the sound of a baby's heartbeat and put a meditative music next to it. So let me play it for you. I'm going to give you 3 minutes of this, something you've probably never heard before. It's really amazing. If you think there's something wrong with your machine, it's not. Now that sound in the background is the heart of a baby recorded inside a human body. Let yourself leave your fear for a moment. You could even go to sleep to this one. Close your eyes. Not if you're driving a car. I'm going to leave you with this to hear it. Listen to what a pool of sperm sounded like, yeah. Pool, meaning, you know, wherever they were. They got a little microphone in there to listen to them. They might have even been in a test tube. And the sound that the sperm made was exactly the sound that you hear at the ocean side when it was magnified. And it kind of suggested that the reason we love the sound of the ocean is because it goes all the way back to our roots. Because why does the sound of an ocean do that magic to you? Well, notice as you imagine the sound of the ocean over the sound of the baby heart, you started feeling the healing power of not being afraid. That's all it is, my friends. You you're not afraid. Hart, M-I-C-K-E-Y, Hart. It's kind of amazing. It's kind of an eerie feeling. You know, when I take it away, it's like I feel like I'm doing something to the baby. I can't let it go. Going back. Unusual programming here at WBAI 99.5 FM. Hey there. We have a, what do we have for you? So we're talking about, in case you just tuned by, you were listening to The Heart of a Baby, the voice of Armand DeMille. If you want to hear that again, what you could do is go to the website, thepositivemind.com. You could download that sound clip, and then you could loop it, so you could have your own recording. So you could download the sound clip you just heard, you could loop it, you could put it end to end, and you could even leave my voice on it. You could mix it in with a little ocean music, and you've got something special. What do you have? You have something that makes you feel at peace, not frightened. And that's all we want. You know, I just want to not be scared. Now, I want to be excited, because we showed you that the brain loves danger. It loves to get excited. If you have a date with somebody and it's totally peaceful, it's boring. Because you want some excitement, you like the newness in it, you know, you like to get a charge in your brain, but you want, somewhere down the line, you gotta feel safe. Safe, that's why people pick therapists. A psychotherapist is an incredible thing. 99% of what they do is questionably effective. But one thing they are, is they're there for you, and they are safe. They're going to be there for you. I mean, if you don't feel that way with your therapist, find another therapist. If you don't feel like, whew, you walk in the door and say, I'm glad I'm here. The best day of my week is being here with you, the therapist. It's like when you go to your massage parlor, same thing, your massagist. Misogynist. Massageur. When you go there, the first thing you want to do is you take off your clothes, you get down on the table. Boom, I feel great, I'm here. That's the way it has to feel. It has to feel like I'm here. I asked many of you to send me comments. I wanted to hear two words, two sentences that described how you considered the positive mind. I said we're doing a new website, and I wanted to get two sentences that described what this program means to you. And so we were flooded, and then we haven't had enough. We could use more flooding. We could use more. We're going to pick some of them and use them on the website. I wanted to hear descriptions, two-sentence descriptions. And you know the key phrase that kept going over and over again was home. Listening to the positive mind is like being home. It's like feeling like I'm at home. Safety. I want to be around humans who I'm not judging and angry and yelling at people and telling people they're bad. So that's why people watch television, you know? That's why people eat comfort foods. People go, why is McDonald's so famous? Safety, man. Everybody wants to feel so stuffed. Just think about it. If you stuff your body with food that blows you up and you cannot digest it, right? I mean, it's indigestible, a lot of it. Hangs in there for a long time. I mean, people do not crave Chinese food. because it kind of passes through you too fast. They crave, you know, I'll go for McDonald's, I'll go for chicken McNuggets, I go for these other things. They get in your body and they sit there forever, and it's almost like you're an animal who's in the jungle who's just feasted on your enemy. You know, and now you're stuffed, and you're going to wait for the next 2 weeks for this food to digest. But you feel safe. How about any of you who are compulsive eaters? Compulsive eaters, me, people who eat and can't stop. You know, remember Entenmann's chocolate donuts? Entenmann's used to be the thing. Nowadays, I'm sure everybody's got something different. There are so many things out there. You get a box of donuts. I hope Roberta's not listening. You get a box of donuts, and you eat one donut, you eat two donuts, you eat three donuts. But if you've ever been pregnant, you might have had this experience, or if you're ever been somebody who's compulsively eating, you start eating, and then at one point, as you get three quarters of the way through your capacity, not to your capacity, but your supply, if you have a quart of ice cream, as you get three quarters of the way through the ice cream, you get this feeling, and it feels like oh, yeah, there it is. And you start eating slower. And instead of the compulsive eating, something kicks in, and kind of your spoon is dripping with food now because you don't need it right away. You could actually put down the food for a couple of minutes. That point that kicks in is called the sate point, S-A-T-E point, but it's also the point where you feel like you're no longer in danger. Now, of course, most people ignore that and they go eating more on top of it. But there is this point you're looking for. It's what you look for when you're eating food. At what point am I no longer hungry? Hunger is a form of fear. Hunger is you searching to replenish your body. When an animal gets hungry and it increases its hunger, it gets desperate and fear because it hasn't eaten, because it could die. So what they built into your system is hunger is one of your fear forms. You have to go out and you have to find something to keep you alive. So more and more, we work on getting to the point where that fear disappears, and people will sell you products to make you feel less afraid. But what they've got to do is sell you two things: a promise of the future and a quieting in the now. If you could get quiet now, it's good. And then by the time you leave here, you're going to say, oh, that was good. I mean, that's why sex is so good, you know. Sex is terrific because what you usually do is you work up to a sweaty froth, right? And then you go over the top of it. But then, let's not forget the next part. You lay down, you hold the other person. You look in their eyes, or even if you're not looking in their eyes, you hold them in your arms. You sweat all over them. You exchange smells, and you feel safe. It's a big deal. Holding somebody is probably more important than the actual sex itself, but the sex exhausts you. You know, it gets rid of things. Teenage boys masturbating 25 times a day, as many of them do, right? That's when you say, what are you doing? They say, nothing. Masturbating in the bathroom 25 times a day behind the stalls. What are they looking to do? It's because they feel safe. After they have an orgasm, boom, there's a moment or two where they feel, okay. It's not sex. It has nothing to do with sex. Nothing to do with a sex drive. It has to do with a safety drive. I got to feel calm. Compulsive sexuality is all that. All addictions are a search for safety. If you think about addiction to anything, heroin, marijuana, smoking, it's I want to feel okay. And so what I'm going to do is adjust my chemistry. Give me a shot of heroin. Have you ever tried heroin? Well, I could tell you, when I was a kid, somewhere down there in the world of jazz that I was growing up in, that stuff kind of passed by me, and whew, I got a chance to taste it once. And I said, my gosh almighty, this is what everybody's doing? Only once. I said, this is making you feel so good. I mean, that's what crack does. Don't you wonder to yourself, why are so many people doing crack when they know it's no good for them? You know, how could they be doing crack time after time after time? Why are there women who will sell their bodies for crack-based cocaine, right? Who cocaine, free-based crack, and they will just, they don't care about their bodies. They don't care about giving sex to anybody. They don't care. They'll do anything for the crack, because when they feel the crack, they feel no fear. When they feel it, when they get it. All drugs are like that. Alcohol's like that. All addictions. Every addiction is based on fear. And one of the things you have to do when you take a person off an addiction is you give them back fear. You say, okay, you're going to stop smoking, so you're going to feel frightened all the time. People talk about they stop smoking, they get nervous all the time. Well, we explained yesterday that condition of nervousness is fear. Whenever a person says, I'm nervous, it means I'm frightened. That's all. If you reinterpret it in your mind, say, oops, scared person. If a person you know says, I'm nervous, the best thing you could do is provide them with a safe environment. Right? Just, you know, you're nervous? Okay. Just have a seat. Relax for a minute. I'll go take care of whatever we need done. That's what a person does with somebody who's frightened. So when a person stops their addiction and they stop doing whatever they do that's non-functional, the first thing that is dysfunctional in the long run, the first thing that happens is they get excited, they get nervous, and therefore they are frightened. And if you're a smart counselor and you're a smart therapist, you address the fear itself. You don't say, what are you afraid of? You say, get that fear feeling, and I'd like you to feel the fear feeling, because there's an interesting thing about fear. The difference between children and adults. Adults can feel fear, and they're allowed to feel it. Children are afraid to feel fear. They feel it, and they get really scared, and they've always got to do something about it. A true adult, meaning a person who is ready for this universe, for this planet, says, okay, I'm scared. I'm going to go through the fear. Just think about a surgical procedure, if you have to go through a surgical procedure. You go through it, and you're scared. There's one person who goes through it and says, I'm scared, I go through it. There's another person who says, oh, I'm terrified, I can't go through it. See, the person who's going to get through it better is the person who allows themselves to be frightened, allows the fear to happen. We've got time for a couple of calls. It's 212-209-2900. I've been talking to you about fear and the remedies that are offered to you for fear. Most of them, as I could say to you, it's kind of amazing. I mean, let me talk about Don Conroe, one of my good friends. I've known Don for 25 years, 30 years I've known Don. Don has a gong. He's a gong master, and he's a gong master. He's been doing this gonging for so many years. Don goes around with his gong, and he hits his gong in many different ways, and he lets the vibration go over your body. And if you lay still and you let yourself feel this vibration, you feel different, especially if you lay still for 22 minutes. See? Now, Don says, well, they've done some studies, and they see what the gong does is it helps you access your delta waves. Delta waves are the waves that you feel when you sleep. And that there's healing properties in, you get the same healing that you would get if you were sleeping. This is a big claim. And of course, the research scientist who did it was probably the school for the study of gong. You know, I mean, usually most of the people who do the research that validates any one perspective is the school that sells that item. However, I've noticed the gongs have magic. Magic meaning that the vibration does something nice to you. And if you close your eyes in front of a gong, I've got this huge one now hanging in my office because after meeting with Don, I said, oh, I got to get one of those. And I went down to Sam Ash on 27th Street, and I found the old drumming store, and I found a beautiful gong for very inexpensively, hung it in my office, hit the thing, and I stay in front of it, and you could feel it wash over your body. Does it heal you? No. Does it encourage you to get quiet for that few minutes? Yes. Does the vibration do something to do with fear? Yeah, you could feel a kind of wash over your body. 212-209-2900, let's take a call. T-Dub, thank you for standing by as you are. T-Dub is sitting in as the engineer today, doing a flawless job. And now standing by and getting callers on at the same time when she's just waiting. When's he going to say, I'll take a call now? Here it comes. I'll take a call now, D-Dub.
Hello?
Oh, you're right there. Look at that. She's flawless. It's great. Hi there.
How you doing?
Good.
You seem to be talking a lot about the negative aspects of fear and how to get rid of it. I don't think we should want to get rid of it. I think fear is one of the great instinctual gifts of life. You can't survive without it.
I agree with you.
You seem to be talking about, you know, how to get rid of it.
No. You must not
want to get rid of it.
You
it's a
great
motivator. It also
wait. Let's back it up, okay? A couple of things.
Okay.
I say fear exists. I think we, as hominids growing up, as primitive animals growing up, needed fear to survive. Yes, absolutely, for sure. The trouble is when fear runs your life. A lot of people do things out of fear that they wouldn't do if they weren't that afraid. So I agree with you. For motivation, for stimulation, fear is a good thing. You seem to live on it. But there are times that you'd rather not have fear. For example, I'll use it in your own life.
But let me just interject something.
Sure.
I think isn't what you're talking about near now anxiety and not fear? Isn't that fear out of balance?
No, it's the same thing. I'm a professional.
Okay, go ahead.
Fear, nervousness, anxiety, excitement, it's all the same trembling in the body. It's all the same thing. We could put different tags on it, but let me give you an example, okay, for yourself. When's the last time you had a serious, intimate relationship?
It's been a while.
How long?
I don't know. It's been a while.
How long?
A serious one?
Yeah.
It's been years.
Yes.
Since I had a serious one.
So, if you were to tell me that it is fear that stops you from finding somebody to be truly close to right now, would you say that's accurate or inaccurate? Or you'd just say you're too busy?
I'd say it's inaccurate.
It's inaccurate, because you could if you wanted to, or you just don't want to.
I'm just not in the right position.
What do you mean?
Things I got to do, things I got to get out of the way.
You see what I mean? So fear is determining you not having the intimacy in your life because there are things you got to do and things you got to get out of the way.
But I don't think that's fear.
What?
I don't think that's fear.
Oh, okay. So maybe we're just using a word. You know, maybe we're just using the word, but it's a funny thing. It's people, if you listen to people who are frightened, and especially people who are frightened and without intimacy, they have a certain tone in their voice. That's how I knew about you in long-term relationships, you know? You could just hear it, and you could hear it, and it's there. Now, most people don't notice it, of course, but I do. I wanted to ask you one more question before we hang up. What's your name, by the way?
James.
James, when you were listening to the sound of the baby's heartbeat, what did it do to you? Did you ignore it?
No, I didn't. It was a few things. Three things I could think of.
Yeah.
One, I liked the rhythm of it.
Uh-huh.
Kind of drumming on my chest.
Yeah.
Another, it was relaxing.
Mm-hmm.
And still another, it was it was almost like scary in the sense that how finite a heartbeat is, and when will it stop?
The final one was fear. When will it stop? Yeah,
I recognize
fear.
Yeah,
beautiful. See that? So you see, right in the middle of it, there you are, James. You're beating on your chest because it's a beautiful rhythm to beat to. It's easy. And I, as a drummer, recognize it's like it's a true rhythm for people to tap on their bodies with, you know? And that's one. And then you could feel the harmony with that.
Right.
And you start to sink into the harmony with it. Another part of you says, oh, my God, how finite this is and how easily the heart can stop.
Mm-hmm.
See, and fear cut off the actual experience at the moment, which is not a bad thing, but it would have been interesting had that thought not popped in.
No, I don't think – I think all
– Let me suggest to you, you know, James, get a copy. Get a copy of this.
Well, I can.
And I'll get a copy of Mickey Hart and experiment with yourself. I think you're going to have some interesting stuff with it.
Let me say something else, okay?
Sure.
I don't think it interrupted the rhythm. I think it was just it was there along with it. And it's just, I wasn't going to run away from it. It was just present at the same time. And I don't think it ruined it.
Yes, oh, I'm sure it didn't.
The other thing is that, Mickey, did you ever hear of a book called The Gift of Fear?
Sure, I know all about it.
It's an excellent book.
Let me get going. I have, I wanted to take one more caller. I hope we have the time. I don't know if we have to fill up this 5 minutes, but we're going to take one more call, okay? Thanks for calling in, James. T-Dub, give me one. I know because somebody's been waiting, and then we'll move right on to get out of here for you. Hi there. You're on the air.
Hello. This is Dennis from Manhattan.
Hello, Dennis.
I just wanted to call our attention, of course, to, and I'm not particularly religious, or at least pious.
A prayer. I knew I left it out. Absolutely.
And one of the Buddha, the truths of the Buddha is that life is pain.
Right.
And angst is a form of pain to anyone who's experienced angst, meaning, I guess, fear. And it was the heart that captivated me. It sounded to me, if you've ever ridden a horse, like a canter.
Yeah.
A horse, the canter is a horse approaching a jump. And the jump is the entree into life. And that's
picture
what the heart
there.
Sounded to me like.
Picture yourself there. What's your name again?
Dennis in Manhattan.
Dennis, picture yourself on that horse right now.
Yes.
All right, so let me go with you.
Yes.
Describe your experience on the horse now. Just describe it as you see it. Go ahead.
I see myself approaching a jump.
Okay, so just instead of seeing yourself from the outside, be on the horse and say, I'm approaching the jump.
I'm the horse. I'm approaching the jump. I cannot disassociate myself from the great American writer who said he died young. He wrote The Red Badge of Courage. And he said, death is not a fearsome thing. It's the last hedge is not so bad once you're over it.
So you're going for the last hedge.
Yeah. That's the way I see it.
I want you to
be on
the horse now.
I'm on the horse.
Go for the hedge. Go for it. Just experience.
Hedge.
No more things. Just go for it. And make a sound as you go over the hedge.
You see,
go
I
for
know,
it. No. Stop thinking. Just go for it.
I cannot disassociate myself from the rider.
All right, so be the rider.
I'll be the rider.
Be the rider and go over that hedge.
Okay.
And make a sound as you're going over right now, because that's the way we're going to end our program.
Okay. I cannot be afraid because I'll frighten the horse.
Right.
And I might die. But the hedge is death anyway, so there's nothing to fear. Thank you.
This is Armand DeMille with you, with the Possible Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM, WTW. I hope I did not stretch myself too far for this program, but I'm just having such a good time, I will have to do my penance. Anyway, listen, I'll be back with you on Tuesday. I've got a very special guest, Noonday Demon. What's his name? Solomon? Andrew Solomon. One of the most incredible books about depression. He's going to be with us, and he's going to be our guest on air. So my special thanks to the entire James Ballin group for letting me be with you guys. You were all terrific. I'll be back with you Tuesday. If you want to send me an email, it's Armand at Brainlink, BrainLink.com. Now look at the website, thepositivemind.com. Back with you on Tuesday, my friends.